Welcome to the Parentpreneur Accelerator Podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm re-interviewing James Golden. James was actually one of our first ever interviewees and featured in one of our very early episodes, episode number 14. And after starting his business in 2010, he's had an incredible journey that included getting a bank grant and later hitting rock bottom, overcoming a cancer diagnosis when he was 26, building his company into a profitable business that employed 10 staff and had, at the time that we interviewed him last, had raised funds for growth through a crowdfunding campaign. I think when we spoke to him as well, last time we talked about the fact that he's a parentpreneur and was living with his wife, with his two daughters and also his son. In fact, I think at the time, James, you probably didn't have your son at that point, but we'll come into that. But the important bit that I really want to explore in depth in this interview is going to be how 14 months on from that interview, a lot has happened. And for James, he's now parted ways with his business and he's now back to being a one-man band. And he was involved in a retreat company called YOLO Retreats rather than doing the fitness business that he had before. So we're going to catch up with James and explore how that came about and how that felt and the difficulty of letting go and the emotions around potentially sort of feeling like it's like a failed business or whatever, but also how he's then come out of that and what he's done and is doing next. So James, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi Alexis, good to speak to you. How's things with you?
Yeah, it's good. And I first want to give you massive credit for because I think you sort of prompted this, which is to have a proper conversation about, you know, closing a business and moving on and changing tack and so on, because I think both of us have got know people who have had to go through this process. And there's loads of examples of people that need to close their business or switch. And there's loads of emotions and pains and considerations as part of it that I think often aren't explored. You know, often the common sort of story that's covered in the media tends to be the successful entrepreneur creating the amazing business and so on. And obviously on the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast, we tend to like to kind of go a bit deeper and expose it all, what's and all. But I think this is a really important area because as we talked about in the green room, we both know, but I can think of a few in the last week that I know of friends and contacts and people that I've worked with in the past that have had to close businesses or have just decided that it wasn't right for them or switch. And I think it can be such a lonely experience for people. So, James, if you could start off by perhaps giving us a bit more depth into what happened since we last spoke what have you done since? And then we'll go a bit deeper.
Sure. Well, I think when you're actually going through challenging times in a business, you're still pressing on very hard and you're not sometimes seeing what's going on around you. And I think you do feel almost obliged to continue to carry on delivering in the way you have. And it's quite challenging to actually see that the business is not going where you want it to be at that time. Hindsight is always a great thing. And it's having that kind of ability to be able to pivot and make decisions that are going to either change the fortunes or accept that actually this isn't going the way you want it to. So I think from my perspective, I learned a lot about probably more in the actual wind up of the company and the changes that we went through to get there than actually setting it up. So it's been a full circle for me in the sense of going through a startup business, employing staff, raising funds at different times to support it in different ways. You enjoy lots of good times and you overcome different hurdles. And to eventually take that into a process of administration. So I went into that after 8 years And it was a big learning curve and very, very painful. And you do feel very lonely. And that's when you really draw the support from your family. And you do realize that they are the most important thing in your life, because it's very easy for the business to take over. So I, on reflection, you learn a lot. You go through it, you go through the pain. And then when you look at it after, you learn again, and you actually, there's a reflection, and it's, you know, it's something that you hope you don't do again, but you know you would do it differently, and you would make, and you know what to do in that scenario.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's explore it a bit, and particularly the timeline, because I think there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings around kind of what the timeline can look for a business like this. So how quickly did it go from basically a booming, growing business, you know, hiring more people or paying yourself more or whatever we might call that, through to having to, you know, actual close the doors? What kind of time period are we talking about there?
Yeah, I guess it happened a lot quicker than it was probably actually happening, but you don't see it. Mm-hmm. And then you start to realize, and you start to put the measures in place to try and prevent it. We did have a fundraising program where we did raise funds into the company, and we was looking to actually develop another sort of component to the core business. And this is actually for me where it started to go wrong, because the core business actually suffered as a result. Because all of a sudden the infrastructure wasn't there, and we're trying to actually drive another component in the business with the new funds raised, and that wasn't working. So all of a sudden we've got this component not working, which was the fitness holiday retreat component what we were trying to build. And then I had a fitness club that had very high overheads and 10 staff, and that started to suffer. That started to actually show, you know, it was starting to slide. It was starting to wobble. So all of a sudden you're seeing yourself in between this. So it's then making those quick decisions, but all of a sudden it's starting to sort of break a little bit around the edges.
Yeah.
We start to pivot and start to look at some new direction and putting the stop gaps in. But in simple terms, we overstretched the company, and it just wasn't ready. And you kind of didn't see it when you're making those decisions, but then you see it after. And it just wasn't ready to expand in the way we wanted it to. I think the fitness industry has evolved massively in the last 10 years. You've had the boom of the boutique clubs. You've had the boom with the more sort of budget end as well. And probably actually looking at the club itself, it didn't actually move with the changes, and it got stuck a little bit. And subsequently, it kind of suffered because of that as well. So there was lots of things that caused it to end up where we ended up, where we had to make that decision as a business to effectively put it into administration, which was in August 2017. So it's a date that's kind of it marks in your brain when it actually happened. You never forget that date. It's almost like your certain events that happened in your life, and that's always a date that I'll remember.
Yeah, and as I mentioned at the top of this episode, you know, thank you for sharing it, because I think this is a really useful exercise for other business owners. I mean, you mentioned, you know, you learn more closing that business than in starting it, unfortunately, you know, there are lessons that are very painful ones to learn, and this is a perfect example. I mean, the fact that you already have identified that actually overstretching the business, you know, taking a successful business that was doing well on one product, and then getting some funding and starting another product, but not having the infrastructure, and then overstretching and, you know, taking your eye off the fitness club, which meant that it hadn't moved with the times and so on. Having that understanding and highlighting that to others is so useful, because I think it's very common for businesses to stretch and add new products and so on way too early. I think there's an element of the kind of entrepreneurial chasing the shiny that we all have, where we want new product and so on, rather than really seeing the opportunity in scaling and doing more with what we've got. It's very common that entrepreneurs that I've worked with and supported, you know, will look at how to grow their business and the fact that they need to increase their marketing and so on. And the first things that they go with are all brand new, shiny things. You know, it's completely new channels, it's completely new technology or people or whatever. Whereas actually normally the biggest wins are in doing slightly better on all the things that are currently working can get, you know, can get you two times, four times the results over a much shorter period of time. But of course, those are the more boring things than starting a brand new part of the business. So as entrepreneurs, we tend to overlook them. So for you, you mentioned that, you know, August was the time that you then put it in administration. When was the, and that it was kind of precipitated with the funding campaign, which I think is interesting, we'll go into too. When was the funding campaign? When was that run? Was that a few months before?
We had a profitable business through the years of 2014, 2015, going to 2016. We were pretty solid. We thought we were ready to raise funds, which we were successful with. And we were looking to, as I say, invest in another component to sort of start to scale and channel the business in a different area. And we even had a vision to open a second club. But we knew the club wasn't quite right. But probably looking back, it really wasn't where we needed to be. It couldn't actually stand up by itself. So without me being there as much as I was before sort of stepping into the role of trying to build the other component. So we raised funds early in 20, actually it was a year before. So 12 months before. So it was actually in July, August of 2016 that we were successful in bringing some further funds. And even then, looking back, was we underfunded? There's all these questions you ask yourself. You were trying to go into an area that you really didn't have enough experience in. And we felt that we could build it off the back of the enterprise and the club that we had. But I guess that's the decisions you make, and you never know unless you go there. So it was always going to be one of those where it was a do or die. Not, you know, you're thinking, you know, you're going to take on quite a lot of funds and more debt into the company. Can it service it? And then can what you're investing in provide what you want it to? It was a really simple case looking back of the just trying to overstretch and almost say double the size, but certainly increase the size substantially from what we had, where it was all very controlled, to something where we actually needed the infrastructure to control it better to allow the scale up. So a big learning process. I think for any entrepreneur, you do make mistakes, and it's then how you learn from those mistakes to form a process for success.
I think that's awesome. So I think that's really wise words. So what we're talking about there is really a kind of 12-month timeline between I want to call this out and highlight because there'll be entrepreneurs in this situation. We're talking about 12-month timeline between thinking about, right, business has been great, we've had a few years of profit, I now want to grow it significantly, and I've got my new idea of how to do that, and 12 months later closing it. So I think that's important because I'm trying to remember which book. I think it's in the book The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham, where he says all my problems started as good ideas. And I think, you know, we're all susceptible to this, right? It's most of the challenges and difficulties that we have in our lives and businesses come, you know, many of them, or at least rather than most of them, many of them start life as great ideas that we have. And often really, at the time that we come up with those ideas, we're not brilliant at really assessing the effort involved or the likelihood of success or the potential risks and so on. And that's a common thing. Looking back, what could you have done back in summer of 2016 that would have enabled you to either identify that that wasn't the right route for you to take, or to put measures in place that meant that you would prevent yourself from having the problems later? What could have been done back then if you're advising someone in the identical situation now?
I think road test on a much smaller scale first, where without it damaging your sort of main, whether it be core product, core business, if you're going into another area. And that's probably where we had essentially road tested internally, but not done any real external, and probably just hadn't looked at route to market and just how we would go from almost like a standing start with it to try and actually build this product. So it probably moved too quick. And that's probably a big piece of advice that I can give to road test and actually flavor it first and try and actually work out what it needs to look like on a much smaller scale before you go for a bigger shot at the title with it.
Yeah, that's really a fantastic advice. And what about in terms of at the time, Did you feel like there was a risk of you pulling, you know, the damage that could be caused by you pulling your time off the core business? Or was that something that you kind of thought, nah, it'll be fine, it seems to run without me? What was it? Or perhaps you just didn't think it would take that much time on the new business? What was your thinking?
I think maybe you're drawn into the numbers of the business and you feel actually it can support itself. But then it does come down, it's in the service industry, and how much does that business require you? And I had actually taken an office on a temporary basis to support the new part of the business, and actually took me out personally at the company. Mm-hmm. So we had good people in the business. You know, there's no, from me, never point any fingers, never mm-hmm. blame. It was just, it probably wasn't ready to actually allow me to go and sort of start to apply time and energy into another area. So it just wasn't ready for that. It probably needed another good sort of 12 to 18 months of that consolidation and stability in place. Because in the service industry, there's been lots of struggles with restaurants and all sorts of high street brands, etc. And we're building business to the people, and stuff and things change. Nothing stays the same. Yeah. And certain things happen that change within the business, and you're already sort of working on something else, it's quite difficult to pull yourself back over when you're trying to actually let this one fly. So, it is making sure that you do have the right people and the structure to do it.
That's really interesting, because I think it sounds like what you're kind of alluding to there is that one is obviously making sure that you've got a nice stable setup, and making sure that it actually can run without you for extended periods of time, or at least that it's easy for you to identify what you need to do to make sure that even with a small amount of time you can keep it running. But it sounds like you're also alluding to a few changes that were perhaps unexpected in the business, changes of staff there. I'm guessing that also there's that kind of tendency that we all have to look into the future and assume that the only thing that will change is the idea or the thing that we're working on, and assume that in this case the existing business will basically continue exactly as it was.
Yes.
Like no one leaves. Yes. big injuries, no competitors arrive, nothing happens. It all just ticks over the same. Do you think that's fair?
Absolutely correct. I mean, when you write your business plan, you kind of have this roadmap. There's my destination. This is how I'm going to reach my position of success. And it's those kind of curveballs and bits that come at you at the side that you don't actually put into your business plan. Things don't stay the same. And sometimes they do unexpectedly crop up, or they are present a problem to you completely at a time where you didn't see it coming. So these things do happen, and it needs to be, as a business owner, you've always got to be on your toes and ready for changes in whatever it may be, whether it's just changing climate or another product that's spun up, a mile down the road that's going to challenge you. So competition, there's always things that are going to come at you, and you can prepare yourself as best as possible, but until it actually happens, there's always that, you're not quite sure. In your business plan, you kind of think you've got it tight in all areas, but you never really know until you're day to day in it, and you've got to make these decisions. And it's a fast pace, it's moving all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's really valid. And I think your point there around you as the owner, even if the business can run day to day without you, you're still going to make decisions when things change. And it reminds me, actually, when you talked about sort of having your eye on the ball, it reminds me of the episode that I had with Simon Kidd, because he talked about how he, because in the interview, we talked about how he'd had multiple businesses fail in the past. But the key distinction between then and now, when he has multiple businesses that do are running successfully without him, is that what he has is kind of the regular processes in place. So, for example, the metrics that each of his business managers has to send him on the weekly basis, and against the targets that have been set based on what they know works. And as a result, if they're ever off target in any area, he then, there's a very specific flow that he then follows to then go and investigate what's happening and so on. And I suppose that allows him to prioritize where he focuses his time. And indeed, as a result of that episode, actually, I looked at my own software business and where we could be doing that better. So that now in my software business, I have an equivalent, you know, with a sort of exec dashboard that's got our 20 most important KPIs, and I review that with my business partner every week. And definitely feel like even with an hour once a week, we're able to make sure that we're on top of what are the top issues, how are we trending, and so on. Do you feel like those were some of the things that were missing back then? Because,
yeah, very, very much so. I mean, I think being in business, I think you're continuously learning and you're trying to find the sort of magic formula to actually make your time more efficient, your company more efficient. And you're trying to establish that best practice. And sometimes you need to find that best practice through making certain processes and then actually stepping back and trying to find a way of doing it better. So I totally understand that. And that's something that kind of you learn being in the business, I guess, what works for you and what works best for your company. But very much sort of getting those processes in place is crucial. And I think every business is not the same, but actually what you're trying to deliver is the same processes and methods that can help you go from where you are to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so how long, over what kind of period of time did you see the kind of sales or, you know, the profit perhaps being disappearing, I guess, for whatever version, like over what period did you see the profit disappear before you kind of then went, ah, this is a trend, you know, like,
yeah,
because I'm assuming that it wasn't like you had a year of making a loss every single month and then went, oh, actually the business has run out of money and now I've got a day to turn it into administration. Presumably you, albeit as you say, you had your eye off the ball, presumably you saw it at some point. How long do you think it took before you felt like, okay, I've got enough data, I've seen it enough to kind of know I've got a big problem here?
It doesn't happen overnight. Mm. You kind of reach, you don't realize it's a peak, but looking back, the business was probably at its peak in the point of sort of 2015 going into 2016. And that's at the point where we felt as a company, the people that were involved, when we sat down and felt that was a good time for us to look at scaling the business. But it actually hit a peak, and we didn't actually progress on from that sort of position of strength that we were in there, because actually where I started to focus my attention was almost alleviating myself away from the day-to-day operations of the business and even the delivery of the service. So you're starting to see a bit of a transition. So you're starting to get the other people in the company to service the customers we had. And then I'm actually starting to apply myself into another part of building under the brand, building the component under the brand. So I guess the infrastructure just wasn't there for me to do it. And then subsequently you question the actual business model. So do we actually look at the business model and say, well, actually it's not a scalable business because it needs you too much. So it's more of a lifestyle business on that basis, but you don't actually see it for that when you're in it. So our peak was very much at that point, as I say, when just before we went to raise some funds, and then funds come into the business and you feel very comfortable. You think you've made it big time and you think you're going to the next level. And that is very exciting, very exciting. You've got a lot of people involved. There's lots of moving parts. And that's the challenge, is being able to control those moving parts, get them all pulling together, and then making sure that you're pushing in the right direction for success. And I feel for me, I was probably pushing in a direction that was not going to be successful. So it's identifying what works and pushing that button.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the funding ones are a really interesting point, because I wrote down a couple of things there around almost the problem with that funding. Because on the one hand, a lot of businesses look at, oh, well, we want the funding now because we've had the successful period and therefore we feel it's the time to grow. And as you say, like just because you've had a successful period and you're at a peak does not mean that will continue. Some of it may be luck, there may be difficult times ahead, and so careful of building on that foundation. But of course, the funding itself can make you feel a bit perhaps too comfortable. You know, having a big pile of cash suddenly makes you feel like you can spend a load and build at your costs higher than they should be.
Sometimes you're throwing money at the problem, but you haven't actually identified, you know, really what the solution is. So you almost feel that you're going to overcome it. Just chucking the investment at it and hoping it will turn it around. So, and again, you know, you invest in areas of the business that you think are right. It turned out to be wrong. It's new, you know, sometimes it is an element of trial and error. So I guess for me, you do things a little bit more on a sort of a smaller scale. Really make sure you know before you start to move 10 steps, you move one step at a time.
Yeah, and I think I like the point that you make around the other sort of potential problem with that funding is that it gave you so much to do that made the problem of both starting up the new thing but also keeping your eye on the existing business so much harder, right? Like, yeah, you know, when you're doing a load of brand new stuff, like raising funds and then dealing with the people that have put the money in and then making sure that money's organized properly and then hiring the new staff or investing in the new marketing or whatever, there's a lot of things to attract your attention, which means that even the, you know, 1 hour or 1 day a week or whatever that the existing business requires can then get overlooked.
You feel like you're drowning at times. You know, that's part of the challenge, is being able to deal with that, put a solution in place and actually sort of make sure that your time is efficient and you're driving the business in the right way. So it can get very negative. It can get very tough as well mentally. I remember the stresses and the mental demands during that last 12 months were immense. They were very, very tough. And you're also trying to keep everybody happy at home. It was very much a family business for us. My wife was involved in the company as well. So it's not as if you've got a backstop. You know, you can see things changing. You're trying to do everything you can to avoid it ending up in, God forbid, it's not, you know, we're not going to end up there. I think it's not, you know, it's not, I think we feared that and feared it for a long time. You get very emotionally attached to what you've developed. I set the company up in 2010. So, you know, it's a long part of our lives where we were building it, and you're very proud of that. And you feel it's very much part of your day-to-day life. You talk about it over dinner. It comes very much into the house every day. So, yeah, it was, you know, it's, but then you look at it and think about it. So it's all a learning process, isn't it? You know, you're not, nothing is, if it was all mapped out for you, it's very easy.
Yeah.
We'll be doing it.
So was there a particular moment at which you realised, this has gone wrong and I now need to fix it? And what were the options on the table? For example, did you consider the option of, actually, it's the new business, the new idea I need to kill. I need to get rid of all that and I need to refocus on my core and get back to the club and make the tweaks it needs. You know, what was the kind of, what was that moment and what were the options you explored?
I had consulted shareholders in the business. And, you know, we was exploring some further fundraising to support the, you know, actually shut the retreats down and look at the club. But I think it had taken a lot out of me physically and mentally. And I just felt that it wasn't set up right. I probably wasn't happy in the business like I once was. And I was going to struggle to turn this around. I think it had drawn a lot. It'd take a lot out of me. And it just felt too tall an order. If you raise further funds, it's more debt. And when you come down to the crunch with it, is that the solution? I didn't think it was. So I couldn't see. I felt I had to find some new direction in life for me personally and sort of let go. And that's the hardest thing, is to let go, because you've built this brand and this company up from scratch, and you've, it's been such a, like I've said, it's a major part of your life. So to let go is quite a challenge, and it's leaves you raw for quite a few weeks. But it's always light at the end of the tunnel. You know? It's no one's.
It's at the time it feels incredibly lonely, right? Because at the time it feels like you're the only one who's ever had a failed business, and that everyone else seems to just be able to make it successfully. And as a result, I'm this rubbish entrepreneur that can't do anything right. And as a result, you know, and you just go down a bit of a spiral, because we mentioned when we were talking before we recorded this episode, like, you know, I've shared it before. My software business is my, I think, eighth business. It's not my first. It's not my second. It's not my, you know, it's like it takes time. for you to kind of find something that works. And the fact is that most successful business owners out there have had multiple businesses that they've had to close and pivot on and so on. In fact, I remember the episode that I had with Josh Pickford. He talked about how he had had multiple businesses before, and often I was asking him in the episode, like, so how did you know to close that? Because that feels premature. And often his attitude was like, not, oh, it's failing. It was more like, oh, it's not going crazy hockey stick growth. Therefore, close it, do something else. And it's like, yes. Wow, that's amazing that he, you know, felt that. And in his case, it's worked for him. But like, at the time, you don't feel that, right? I mean, what did it feel like for you?
I think because it was the first business, and it was the one that I had kind of, I had almost put heart and soul and literally put everything on the line with it to an extent. And it is knowing that actually it's sort of that when to let go, this is not right. It's not going like the chap you just mentioned, it's not going hockey stick crazy. So it's now being more experienced in that, you kind of can see it and you would know. So I guess you first time round, you're not going to, because you're going to have that emotional attachment to it and you're not going to let this thing go, and you're going to grip like no tomorrow, gripping hard, sort of fingertips kind of, you know, burn at the ends. And then eventually it's sort of, there's no choice because everyone's around you saying, actually, it's done. It's time to make some decisions. So then you know, that decision is, and you feel, you do feel like you're, a bit of a failure, really, and you're sort of talking to people and sort of saying, well, actually, you know, well, it was a very great from the outset and from what they see, and but you put on a brave face. Yeah, no one sees that coming. You know, you look at yourself in the mirror every morning, you see those lines increasing in the forehead and the stress building up around the eyes, and you know what's going on inside. It's it's a tough place, really tough, but you know what. Well, it doesn't completely break you, it does make you. It gives you, I think, a much better understanding of when time comes again, and you've learned these great new set of business skills. And so it feels to me that I've had a very extended process of learning business for it, really. But you're learning all the time.
Yeah. And so I think, as you say, like, it's hard mentally, physically. I mean, you allude there to the fact that actually it's a big part of your identity. Like, talking to friends and family, they think of you as this person who runs this particular business, particularly over that period of time. You know, it's I get it too. It's the you know, it's the standard question, isn't it? You go to the family get together or whatever, and they ask how's, and then your business name, like it's a member of your family, and that they're checking on how it is. And you must have had that awkward conversation multiple times of like, oh, actually not so good. And that's so right. How did you kind of climb out the other side of that then?
Well, I think, like I said, from the very start, I mean, you really do see what's most important for you in life. And that's family, and that's your children, your wife, and, you know, what you have. And you draw strength off having those guys around you and the support. And you've got to sort of pick yourself up eventually and find, well, okay, I've got to find some direction here, because, you know, life doesn't stand still, and you can't carry on feeling sorry for yourself and licking your wounds. I think for me personally, I am quite fortunate in the respect I've been in the fitness industry a long time, been quite long in the tooth at it, and it's what I love doing. So it enabled me to sort of fall back into that. And prior to setting up the business, you know, I used to guest speak and present group fitness, and I've looked after many clients and traveled with them. So I felt, well, I'm quite experienced and skillful at what I do, so I can set up my own fitness coaching service and build that up. So start, just build it up over the course of the rest of the year, and launch it in the January. So that's what I've done.
I love that. So because there's a few things I want to pick out. So I think the going back to your roots of what you really care about, and the family, and making sure that, you know, even when things get tough with the business, like, prioritizing getting that family stable first is so important, because, you know, this story could have gone a different way. You know, this story could have been, yeah, actually the business is really suffering, and I took it out on my family, and as a result, I don't have my family anymore, right? It's And I know people have gone down that path. And so I think, credit to you for having that realization and making sure that actually you go back to those things as being the most important, and almost like resetting a bit or recalibrating your identity. I think it sounds like you kind of did there. And then it sounds like the next step, once you've done that, was finding something else that you could then get excited about, finding the new thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been excited, hence my business was in health and fitness. And that is my passion in life. I've spent 20 years in it. And it was quite, once I could see and understand what is went wrong and find some new direction, it was quite easy for me to sort of get back on the horse to an extent to start to create something that would inspire me to help others and move on. Because the fact is, you've got a family, you've got bills to pay. My wife and I were both in the company, and we had to sort of make decisions on our next moves. So it all fell into place, but you kind of have to take a few weeks to look at that and how you're going to move forwards. So it's on a test. It tests your resolve, tests your character, and you can't sort of just buckle and hide away from it. That's the thing. You've got to face up to it and think, well, what's next? You can't keep looking back at what didn't go right. I look at where mistakes were made. I won't make again in that way. And move on. We create our opportunities. I think as entrepreneurs, that's what we do. We're full of energy, and That's what I enjoy, and I treat it as a hobby as well. So
that's awesome. And how did you manage to then coming out the other side? Because how much of an overlap was there with putting the previous company into administration and starting on the new business? For example, was it difficult to prioritize your time because you were having to do both simultaneously? Was there a gap? And how much time did you find like closing the business actually took?
Yeah, I mean, the club actually closed in August, and it was actually sold out of administration. So there was work for me involved in that, even though you're not involved in it anymore, but however, there's an obligation. But you're really starting to think about what you've got to do moving forwards, because the most important thing is your family, and what's important is to start to get your next yourself in a position that you can start to generate income and make money. So for me, I rebranded myself as the Fitness Pro. So I thought about this. My wife and I have become a little project to get over the table. I've been in the industry 20 years. I'm not the kind of typical fitness social media where the industry's moved on, but I wanted to create something that was a high-end premium. So I branded myself and created a product that has that whole premium focus to it. So it's called the Premium Coach. And I launched that in January. Worked with a web designer, so I've had a few contacts. You build contacts in business as well. I mean, so many contacts, and all of a sudden you look at your LinkedIn profile, you look at your contact, who can help me, so I've got a little website up and running, and I've just built that up. So subsequently, that's created a brand for me, got me back into a place that I really enjoyed doing. So I'm offering a premium coach package to a set of VIP clients that want to buy into more than just a fitness trainer at a club. I offer a real overall package to health, wellness, nutrition, and one-to-one training sessions, etc. And then also was an opportunity start to present again. Once the company's in the background, there's new things starting to be presented to you. So all of a sudden you think to yourself, you feel good about yourself again.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I think that journey of going from, right, I've got an idea, and then reasonably quickly, and certainly quicker than when you first did it, because you've got the contacts and you've got the experience, like getting something up, and therefore just getting out there again and starting to have those conversations. I think, as you say, you suddenly start to be aware of opportunities that previously you'd have seen as a distraction. And indeed, other people may have even discounted, because they'd have gone, oh, well, he won't want to do this or help me with X or whatever, because he's got that other business. And so suddenly all that stuff kind of comes out the woodwork. And I think that's really important for people to kind of think about, because it's impossible to see that, and yet it almost requires a little bit of faith in the fact that actually everything you've done, particularly as in your case, over a period of 7 years with that business, you had built up a lot of contacts and a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience that enabled you to get started and do things more effectively. And I'm guessing that the in fact, that we've already got examples, like the things that you've put in place from the off are already helping. So, for example, I'm guessing that the premium point that you made, that was a specific thing that you perhaps felt like in your previous business you hadn't quite nailed early on. And as a result, it's a lot easier to put in at the kind of foundation and forming of the business, right?
Correct. You've been in the industry a long time, like I have, and you see how it's moved on. You want to create something that's going to suit you as a person. Yeah? So it's it all become quite exciting again, really. You sort of see everything kind of, you lose things that you've spent so much time on and you're hurting for quite a long time, but then actually you see new opportunities and actually evolving something again. And it becomes a project, and one thing leads to another. So that's kind of for anyone that's kind of in that position, it's quite important to start looking forward quickly and not looking back too much at what's gone behind. Because it can be quite painful.
Yeah, I love that. It's such great advice, and I think it's a hard thing to do, right? It's because essentially we're saying once you've made the hard decisions around closing it or moving on and whatever, you kind of need to go, right, I've now put in place the plan to close it all. Now what am I going to go get excited about? Because I need something new that I can get really excited about and feel really positive about, and start working on it. Not just for, because I need money in or financial reasons, but actually for your own mental well-being, as you say, being able to focus on that future and looking forward rather than back. I think that's so important. So paint that picture for us now, James. So now when you're looking forward, what are you, what are the plans for the business versus what you've done in the past? Because it occurs that this business sounds like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it relies or rests even more firmly on your own personal brand than perhaps you'd done with the previous business. And yeah, obviously we've talked about the fact that one of the issues with your previous business is that it had that reliance on you. Talk to us about that. What do you see as being the future of the new business? What's the big things that you're doing differently, and what's the reason for that?
Yeah, well, I've created a brand for myself and see myself as a vehicle, and in terms of creating a platform for success. So I've got a set of clients that I manage now, and that's working very well. And I am also a part of another company, which is called YOLO Retreats, which I was approached to be involved in on a sort of set the business up, be the head of fitness, work alongside a chef, and create wellness programs that we would evolve initially in the Cotswolds, which we've done on a trial basis this year, and we've had some success with that. So I'm a small shareholder in it, and that project on the side, where there's a little team working together on building that business up, and the long term for it would be to actually scale that up beyond where we've running various events and retreats, and the corporate market's quite interesting, so we're looking at that. So that's exciting, and that's something I know and I've had some experience in, and I can deliver the fitness component of it very well. So that's moving quite nicely. We'll actually be launching a set of dates in the next couple of weeks for next year, so we've got a couple of new venues that are going to support that, and the people involved are experienced, and they've all had different businesses in different areas. And that's interesting. It's a project on the side, that one. I see it as something that could really evolve into something quite exciting. We'll see where it goes. And then a further business that I've got involved with, this has been actually in the last 2 months, and it's a project totally out of the zone of fitness, which is it's actually a kind of an enterprise that's actually a chauffeuring business. So it's another dad at school who was very successful in selling in estate agents, and we've got on very well socially, and our wives are friends. And he approached me if I would be interested in getting involved in a little startup that he's thinking about. I was, okay, I'll have a look at that. I'll have a think about it. So we're working on that, and we're about to launch in January. We're in the sort of the trial stages of it. And the concept is we'll supply the driver to drive your car. So your car, our driver. And the company's called Personal Driver Club. So very different to anything I've ever done.
Cool. So I love that, because I think that what you've got there is, or what you're demonstrating there is, from your previous experience, you've learned that particularly collaboration can really work in your favor. Like being involved in a few different things, but with other people. And you've got some in which you are focused on delivery, or that you're the, you know, you are the product, and others that you're kind of providing advice into, but ultimately that there's other people involved. And I think that's fantastic. And yeah, I wish you all the success for the future. Really, really excited for you. And yeah, looking forward to keeping in touch and seeing how it goes. Unfortunately, we've come up for time, but it's been so awesome talking to you, James. Thank you so much for sharing the experience that you've had and all the lessons that you've learned from it. It's been absolutely amazing.
That's fantastic. They're really good to talk to you, Alexis. And anytime, maybe we can catch up again in a 12 months, 18 months, yeah. And we'll see where these companies have evolved to, if any. So at the moment, it's let's see where it goes.
But that's awesome. No, that's really good. I massively appreciate it. And a big thank you, really, from all of our listeners, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of people out there right now for whom this has kind of really untapped something. And if that is the case for you and you're listening right now, please do email me at alexis@parentpreneur.com or post in the Parentpreneur Accelerator Facebook community, because I know that James would love to get that feedback on if it's been valuable for you, and so would I. James, how else can people reach out to you and indeed learn more about the Fitness Pro and other businesses and so on that you're involved with?
Okay, well, I have a website for me, which is the fitnesspro.co.uk, and my email address is james@thefitnesspro.co.uk. So the other companies I'm involved with are YOLO Retreats and the Personal Driver Club. Feel free to email me anytime, anything business related, anything fitness related. They're the probably areas that I can help with. And I, you know what, I actually enjoy helping people. That's why I'm in the fitness industry. And if I can give any advice on any of those, I would be in my pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And I'll make sure that all of those are available in the show notes, along with also any links to anything else that we mentioned as part of this episode, including some of the previous episodes I referenced, including episode 14, which was the previous interview that I did with James. Thanks again, James. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too. Good to speak to you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.